think we were just saying that just as in one circumstance, like listening to Dharma, we cannot say it's all kusala, or when one's reading a newspaper, there cannot be pariyati. And the same thing when one's appreciating someone else's good deeds, many, many moments of anumodana, but maybe moments of attachment too. Or just like when people pay a lot of respect to ajahn, moments of respect, but also attachment. So yes. Many, many cheetahs. And you had one or two topics that you wished to bring up, Nina. We were just talking about concepts of realities. And I was saying that just because there is thinking about seeing an invisible object, we cannot say it's pariyati. Because if we say it's pariyati, it's like back being back in the book. It may just be repeating words. It doesn't mean there's necessarily any understanding. If we say, oh, now there are seven rupas that are experienced in daily life through the senses, we may just be repeating what we've heard. It doesn't mean them. It is with pariyati or all pariyati. So the pariyati has to be understanding of the reality, or understanding of seeing now, of visible object now. So even though the object is a concept, it has to be with understanding of what appears now.
I can often ask, is the seeing now? And at that moment, there may be conditions to consider seeing, but it's still not the present moment. Because we learn that pariyati always pertains to the present moment, but that sounds very much already like satipatthana. So I still am not sure about sati of the level of pariyati and sati of the level of satipatthana. See?
So when ajahn says, is there seeing now? It's like a reminder that it's seeing is not in the book, and it's not just something we repeat as taught by the Buddha, but at this very moment, there is the reality. There is seeing of what is seen right now. And coming back to really understanding that now it is just seeing which sees visible object at this moment. With understanding, it is pariyati, but not yet right understanding of the reality, but coming closer and closer to the reality.
The coming closer and closer helps. We talk about pariyati as being intellectual understanding. And by intellectual, I take it that we do not mean the usual book study intellectual, but we mean some knowledge having heard and considered. And for pariyati, it needs to be more than theoretical knowledge. It has to be some glimpse of understanding now. Is that right?
I think that we are thinking about words, but actually we have to understand the difference between not knowing, hearing, understanding anything at all. That is no pariyat at all. And while one is studying or reading the book, study like 12 kinds of akusala, not knowing or understanding, one is studying the words to understand the nature of what is there. That is not pariyati. But when there is the understanding that even Dhamma means whatever is real, that is pariyati. Because who can understand that now is Dhamma, not self? But when there is the understanding that what is Dhamma, whatever is real, whatever appears now, appears. So it must be a reality and is conditioned. Otherwise, it cannot appear because it cannot arise at all. By understanding this, it is pariyati. Who knows this before? If there is no reading and considering that we are beginning to study, to understand whatever appears, This is the purpose of studying Pariyatti. We read in order to understand whatever appears, and what word we are reading, it brings about more understanding of what is about reality right now. Not get away from developing understanding theoretically or intellectually, because it's not the direct understanding of whatever appears, but we begin to understand the characteristic of reality which appears in order to have direct understanding of whatever appears. So one knows that this is intellectual understanding because it is about whatever appears. To understand it now is Dhamma. We used to take this for someone, but by studying one knows that the, what is seen now is there with the four primary rupas. It brings more understanding between the visible object and the four primary rupas, never separated. So at the moment of seeing anything, it brings more understanding that there must be hardness, softness there at moment of whatever appears. And since reality cannot be changed, it has to follow one another succeedingly in split seconds. That's why you cannot say that you didn't see anything and then see a very little spot of red and a little spot of green, little spot of brown. But actually, as soon as they're seeing something already, so one begins to understand how fast it is, the succession of the arising and falling away of reality, then we begin to understand the virtues of wisdom of the Buddha. How great it is to understand each reality separately as it is, one by one, like a visible object is not hardness. And so it begins to know that when it's direct understanding, it has to be a moment of not thinking about the world, because now whatever appears is every reality, not word at all. See, each one is a reality. So at moment of knowing the difference between the intellectual understanding and the direct understanding, that is Pariyatti, to understand the difference. And when there is more and more understanding, it's the moment of becoming detached from taking it as a whole, as being or thing, as before, by understanding intellectually. At moment of touching, see, it's hard, a reality, different from what is appearing at moment of seeing right now. This is Pariyatti, understanding it. But you see that there is touching many, many times a day. And where is the Pariyatti? And where is the direct understanding? When there is touching in a day, no understanding. Even one has heard about, one knows more and more about, but it's not lost, but it does not arise. It is as usual, because realities work their way by themselves. No one can push it to know suddenly that this is a reality which one has learned about. So all the way from hearing the teachings up to the moment of enlightenment, it must be with detachment. Always keep that in mind. It's the safe way to not be trapped by lopa and ignorance, because it's only understanding more. So even now, those who have developed, say, some high degree of understanding of reality, it depends, because anatta is there, whether there is direct understanding or not direct understanding, but intellectual understanding is there. But it does mean that when it's there, it arises every moment. Like now, you are listening, and the understanding that you have developed is there. If someone asks you, what are you learning? You might say, oh, I'm learning the teachings of the Buddha. But who knows that you know what is meant by learning the teaching of Buddha. So it's the individual's understanding.
The word intellectual can be a bit misleading, but I think it just means it's concept at that moment, not reality. That's all.
Yeah, it's the concept that's understood.
It's just the concept of the reality at that moment. Like now, if there's understanding of visible object, actually it's the concept of visible object at that moment. Yeah. Yes, because we hear about pariyatti as being intellectual understanding, so someone may think that it's all about a story about realities, but actually, even now, there can be pariyatti so briefly that at this moment of understanding, like we hear about hardness that's touched at that moment, there may be understanding instantly when we hear about its hardness touched, just a dharma, no thing in it, but it's a concept that is the object of the understanding at that moment, and that is pariyatti. It's not a long story about hardness, it's just moments of understanding, but when it's not the reality itself that's object, it's the concept of the reality, just a moment, and again it's not putting it in words or saying something, but just at that moment of understanding, which has to develop until it's direct understanding of the reality, not even moment of thinking.
I mean, of the level of pariyatti.
Kachan was going to say something.
And I was just going to say also that it's understanding, but short of direct understanding of a reality. So it's understanding about a reality, but not direct understanding of the reality.
Example, and if someone asks you while you are speaking English, whether you can speak Thai, see? It doesn't mean that at moment of speaking English, she cannot speak Thai, but she can, but at that moment she speaks English. See, it's like intellectual understanding. Even it's not moment of direct awareness, but where is the intellectual understanding? You can speak Thai, but at that moment you speak English. It doesn't mean that she cannot speak Thai.
No, it doesn't mean that I cannot speak Thai, but I'm not speaking Thai at that moment. I'm trying to relate this to pariyatti.
Like, can you understand what the teaching's about? It's like, can you speak Thai?
Okay.
While you are speaking English? It does mean that at that moment you cannot speak Thai. You can, but you do not speak English at that moment.
Right. So, pariyatti
is what one has learned.
It's what one has learned that may or may not arise at any given moment.
Right.
You could also say that it's confirmation of what one has learnt, but without being direct experience of a reality.
Getting closer? No. I want to go back to something you said earlier on, Ajahn, about just because there's a, you know, when there's seeing and there's a, You talked about a brown dot or a red dot or a green dot or a spot or something. I'm having trouble figuring.
Couldn't Kanchana, can you cook? She can cook, but at this moment she doesn't cook.
Right.
That is intellectual understanding.
Okay.
But while she is cooking, it's not intellectual understanding.
It's direct at that point.
Yeah.
Satipatthana already.
And now we will talk about a reality, sati. See, does sati arise now, or is there enough understanding of sati? Is there a moment of have mistaken understanding that sati is just any time when touch. See? So intellectual understanding must be understanding correctly.
And then there is also sati.
Yes, but that's it. This is intellectual, not at moment when it arises.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why if there is no intellectual understanding, there will never be direct understanding at all.
It's difficult subject.
I think that sometimes we make it difficult by even thinking too much about it, because if we hear about how it is just hardness, touch now, it's clear, and what is touching is just touching, no one who touches, it's just a moment of experiencing and gone. What is seen now...
Yeah, excuse me, this moment is intellectual understanding when Sarah is talking about it, right?
Actually, whether we call it intellectual or pariyatti or nothing, it's clear at this moment that it's just hardness that's touched, no one there or anything. So, actually, there is intellectual understanding, many moments of understanding. If there wasn't any intellectual understanding, we wouldn't listen to Ajahn at all if it made no sense. So when we hear that, actually, there's just the world of what is seen at this moment, just living alone at a moment of seeing, and there is some understanding that it is just the citta now, just seeing now, no matter what it's called, it is pariyatti at that moment. So no need to think too much about it, yeah. Because if we understand more about dharmas, then the intellectual understanding is accumulating, like the person who becomes a good cook, even if they're not cooking. Actually, those skills have been developed in the same way that pariyatti understanding is developing, no matter whether we think, oh, this is pariyatti, or don't think about it. At those moments of understanding, it's accumulating anyway.
Gabby, do you know what nama is?
Nama is that which experiences
the nama,
an object.
The nama which arises. The nama which arises, experience. And do you understand what rupa is?
Rupa is that which arises and is experienced by nama. It doesn't experience anything, rupa.
Is that direct understanding of hardness which is touched now?
Intellectually.
No. The question is there the direct understanding of hardness which is touched now? No need to think. Is there or is not? That's it. That's the answer. Is there or is there not?
It's not, because it's covered by ignorance.
Okay, just no? It's not. This is the difference between pariyatti and direct understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I asked you whether you know what nama is, you know. And I asked you whether you know or understand what rupa is, you know. But when I ask whether now, at this moment, hardness appear to what? To ignorance, attachment, no understanding directly of that as just the reality. That is pariyatti na patipatti. Because you have understood, but not at that moment you know. At that moment, it's not direct experience. Okay?
Yes, okay.
Yes. No matter what you learn about Patichasamupada or Ayata Okanda that we just talked about in the morning, pariyatti, because the arising and falling away hasn't happened to panya, only panya, the highly developed panya, Uddiyapiyayana only, can directly experience that. But when someone is asked whether can it be object of understanding, yes, you know all about that. And Panya knows clearly whether at that moment it's direct understanding or not. So when it's not the direct understanding, it is intellectual understanding. It doesn't mean that you don't know, you don't have intellectual understanding, but it's not the moment when it conditioned direct awareness.
Achan, please explain again how intellectual understanding can be direct understanding.
Oh, because you see that direct understanding is more, it is an expected moment.
Unexpected moment,
yeah. It doesn't mean that you prepare to have intellectual to try to say this is hardness. That is thinking. It's not intellectual understanding. And that is wrong. If there is no understanding as keen as it has developed enough. Because you see that no need to say that it is hard or hardness is rupa or it's not me. But the listening and hearing intellectual understanding develops by itself. No one can say, and you cannot deny, that you don't know, you don't understand at all. So as much as you understand, Panya can see that whether at what moment it is direct, and at that moment it's akusala, and at that moment what is kusala, at what moment it is lopa, see? So hearing and understanding correctly is pariyatti. But is some loop or that you misunderstanding at that moment is not pariyatti.
Or if you just repeat the words, oh, there is the namas and rupas and this kind, but no understanding, then not pariyatti.
But still, reality is so very, very amazing because so many conditions to condition such and such idea of thinking to arise. For example, even you have very sharp and good understanding of pariyatti, it can condition moment of it's not so, but not as long that you like the reader's thinking about it, but it can happen. And that moment, you know, is not direct understanding. Panya knows everything correctly. Do you have pariyatti, Kun Jonathan?
At times.
Why?
It's momentary.
Any time.
He said at times, sometimes.
Yes, yeah, Ajahn heard me, I think. Any time. Can be any time.
I have lopa. Do you mean that I have no pariyatti?
Sorry?
I have lopa.
Yes.
Do you think that I have no pariyatti?
No, I don't think you have no pariyatti.
So, understanding is there. See?
Right.
It cannot, no one can erase the understanding that is, it, it's developed or it grows. Otherwise, without the intellectual understanding, there would not be other time that there can be direct understanding. See, even at moment is lopa, but the intellectual understanding which is there can condition next moment of understanding directly. It does mean that no, I have no intellectual understanding. No matter at moment of lopa or dosa or moha, intellectual understanding is there in my mind, like all kusala and kusala are accumulated.
This morning you spoke about knowing the moments of sati from the moments without sati, sati of level of pariyatti, for example. So,
at moment when sati arises, can it not be known?
It can, but I'm not sure that it
but
is.
But when it's direct awareness?
Direct awareness, it would be more clear.
It is satipatthana.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, how can that be satipatthana? To begin to understand the characteristic of reality.
Right.
Until there's no doubt about it.
But it also arises at moment of pariyatti too, doesn't it?
Do you come again to the term pariyatti? Like the word, but
well,
what
I
about the accumulation?
You mentioned this morning about knowing the difference between moments with sati.
Panya knows,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And at moment of direct awareness, it's time to know that it is direct awareness. But if direct awareness doesn't arise, how can one know? it's only intellectual understanding. But whenever it arises, Panya knows. It does not mean that Panya does not know.
You'll give the example of Loba, and then the Isparyati, it is there.
Pariyati, it's there.
It's there. You mean it's accumulated.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
Just like Loba has been accumulated for so long, so even when there is no Loba, even at moments of dosa, that tendency is there, ready to arise instantly when there's an opportunity. In the same way, when Panya has been accumulated, it's not lost, it's there, meaning it's dormant even at that moment of Loba, ready to arise immediately afterwards or any time when there is opportunity or conditions. So that's what it's meant when it's there all the time. It's just, it's been accumulated, so it will arise again and again.
Nina, do we know what is meant by the world of seeing and visible object?
No.
Yeah. But not just from, in this moment, the world of seeing appears, right? We have an understanding of what that means. So, right, but not just repeating things we've heard, but we appreciate that at this moment of seeing, that is one world of experiencing that is different from the experiencing of sound through the ear door.
Yeah.
Right, so yeah. That would have to be a level of pariyati.
Pariyati, yes.
It seems in some ways we're maybe overworking the what is pariyati, but one thing that's important for sure is to know what is not pariyati, because people confuse the what they read in books or what they might hear in these discussions and simply repeat it without relating it, without some understanding of now. So I just, that's the way it's seeming to me, that pariyati is a level of panya that grows as we hear and consider more, and it grows so that there is an understanding of what is happening at the moment without labeling it or reciting it. Yet at the same time, it's not direct understanding yet, it's growing towards it. And the important piece is to know what is, not pariyati, which is the, like you memorize the periodic table when you studied chemistry in school. Well, if you went and memorized lists in the Abhidhamma, that would not be pariyati.
So when there is delirious thinking, like thinking with mana, I am inclined to suppress it, but I know it's wrong. It's wrong practice. And then I can remind myself it's only a Dhamma, but that reminding is still not pariyati. It's thinking of words. So it may not help, or it may help later. But panya is not, we heard, panya is not enough. But we can't expect panya to be enough already, only after listening for a few times.
Well, I think if one recognizes the trying to suppress for what it is, that is some kind of understanding. We don't have to label it, but obviously previously one didn't notice it or wasn't aware of it. And now if one is aware when it's happening, that's some kind of understanding.
It's moments of trying to suppress mana or any other kusala. Actually, it's wrong practice at those moments, because there is the idea, I can suppress or I can stop it because it's not good. But understanding those moments of wrong understanding those moments are as conditioned dharmas. It is pariyati at that moment that understands. And all kinds of dharmas have to be understood. If moments of wrong view or wrong practice are not understood when they arise, they will never be known, never be eradicated. So this is what it's meant by pariyatti as being there. It's there and it can understand any dharma that arises, and it's not Nina that suppresses mana or tries to do this or that, just conditioned dharmas. So when it's understanding, it understands that they're just conditioned dharmas, not anyone's, very naturally.
I find when I'm thinking of mana, I'm not thinking really of the reality. It's always really more a story or the circumstances that comes back to my mind that I recollect. So that is not very helpful, because thinking of a story and then thinking of suppressing is also thinking I am suppressing, thinking of me. So all those things don't help, really.
Well, then if one is aware of thinking of a story of things, but when that kind of thinking is realized for what it is, it may or may not stop, because it's conditioned. So even though there's some awareness of it, it may continue. So it's not a strategy for having less of that kind of thinking. The aim is just to understand any reality that arises, and as Sarah said, it's conditioned nature.
Well, I'm inclined to think about it, and I'm inclined to suppress it, and I'm inclined to try and solve the problem at those moments. Yes, it's all I, so even now, thinking, reflecting on it, actually, just different conditioned dharmas, all gone, all in the past, not anyone's, just different moments of thinking, thinking wisely, thinking unwisely. So there can be awareness or understanding any time at all.
Yeah, that becomes a bit clearer, because we discuss it so much now, and I find it helps really to make it clear, yes?
And as we said yesterday, mana is so common. Who doesn't have mana? Only the arahat, who doesn't think and proliferate with lobha, mana and ditti. Yeah, so it's so common. So instead of thinking, oh, it's mine, that's so special, it's just different dharmas falling away instantly.
I have a right understanding about pariyatti. And for example, one morning when we were at Nekambo, Anne and I walking to the seaside, so we are so happy. So I said to Kun Anne, so happy to be me. It doesn't mean I have no pariyatti. Yeah.
When we talk about pariyatti, patipatti, and pativeda, it means different level of understanding or knowledge. That's all. It doesn't mean that we have to think now whether looking at Gabi is pariyatti or what. Or at moment of asking about mana and answering about dhamma, when it's pariyatti and when it's not pariyatti. It's not that way. It's only the knowledge, the understanding of dhamma is at what level. Because before hearing about the teachings at all, no understanding at all. But after hearing, it depends on understanding. It cannot be direct understanding immediately. But don't worry about when will it be, but do we understand the word that we heard correctly? Like pariyatti, we shouldn't mind about how much I have, or can it, is enough to be conditioned for direct awareness? Leave it, because that is the understanding of anatthaness. As long as it's not moment of direct awareness, no matter what it is, there must be the knowledge or the understanding of intellectual level. It is accumulated, like lopa is accumulated, dosa is accumulated, the understanding of the teachings is accumulated to the degree of whether it is still the intellectual understanding or it is the patipatti, which will continue on by conditions. So one knows that one hasn't reached the direct understanding, it's only on intellectual understanding. But when direct understanding arises, it's there. So that moment, right understanding sees the difference between intellectual understanding and direct understanding, and it's there accumulated on and on.
And mana, so common, and when it's recognized, it can be known it's quite ugly and easy to have lots of aversion about the mana, so very common, and one doesn't like it when it's seen for what it is. But those are all just dhammas too, the mana, the dosa, the attachment, and just different dhammas. So common and not mine or yours or anyone's, yeah.
At this moment, Panya knows that it's intellectual understanding, but we don't need to find out what moment is there, what word she said is intellectual understanding, see?
And the thinking is there, whether it's with mana or with attachment or with dosa or with usala, because thinking is thinking and it has a specific characteristic. We don't always have to be concerned about what kind of a gusala it is or whether it's gusala or agusala, just thinking. Yeah.
At home, I was thinking of the mana I had before. So that is long ago again.
Long story about me in the past and my past mana and my not liking it. So all me and my mana and my understanding. So just dhammas, just conditioned dhammas.
And when it's the direct awareness, sammasati, it means that knowledge has grown to that degree. So no more mistake about the intellectual understanding and the direct understanding, because one is on the another level of understanding. And when it's not the Pativeda, right understanding knows that it's only level of direct awareness, sometimes, not all the times, but it cannot get it lower than that because it has a reason as direct awareness.
Topic of the Vinaya from this morning, Pong had a question about the last words of the Buddha about the Vinaya.
It is about the Buddha said that if there is something that is not appropriate in the future, it can be changed. I just wonder why he said that, and what does it mean by that?
You know, in the just before his death, Parinibbana Sutta, the Buddha says something like, with regard to the rules for the monks, that something to the effect that if something is not appropriate, it can be changed, and people always misunderstand this and use it as an excuse for, oh, now times have changed and so we don't need so many rules or whatever. But I don't think that was the meaning, but I'd like Ajahn to say.
You think that it's time for Buddha to have the disciples realize that it cannot be changed. It seems like he allow, but actually it's not like that, since it's laid out by Buddha himself.
Did he say it?
Well, the future, if someone has the idea whether it can be changed.
Oh, I see. So it's actually the meaning is the opposite of what it's seen. So he's saying if anyone would like to change it, it's like now, make the point now, because otherwise that's it, cannot be changed later. So it's like if anyone has a question, raise it now.
And also when he said that to the Arahat. So it means that, you know, they know that it cannot be changed.
They know it's perfect as it is. So, of course, no one will say anything. So it's just to make it clear that later it cannot be changed.
For
true. I heard Ajahn also say the Buddha was so compassionate that he's made for each who so many cases of exceptions when one is ill or when it's very difficult for that person.
It's all laid down already. No one can change. Otherwise, all the rules and his work would be changed according to time.
But I think that I have read somewhere that at the first council, Mahakasapa decided that because the Buddha didn't specify which ones can be removed, so just keep everything.
That's quite certain that it cannot be changed.
That when the Buddha made that comment, he mentioned something like minor rules. Yeah, so then it causes people to consider what is a minor rule, and maybe they realize none are minor.
With respect to the Buddha, I think that those who understand reality knows that it couldn't be changed, because even the minor rule, it should be followed.
The rules themselves are not classified as minor or non-minor, are they? So I think, as Dham was saying, no one could say which rules were minor and which were not.
For example, receiving the money, minor or not minor?
I thought not minor.
Some might think it's minor. Parajika, something like that.
But what kind of offense is that when a bhikkhu gives money? Yes.
Kunsangok ka. To me, it's not the manners of monk is enough. I don't have to find out in details more. That's enough for me to know that that person shouldn't be monk.
As even the samanera also has to keep 10 precepts, so it's
not,
very
not
essential.
Only receive,
right?
Even just you have pleasure or pity or please to have, that is wrong.
Sorry, you're to what?
Whatever is given directly or indirectly to you.
Yes.
If there is the kind of
excitement or
or lopa attached to it,
then. And if one receives anything like even books or some things, and it's not actually personal gift, or it's to the gift is to the son.
What's the question? Is it receiving or using or both?
Using. Yeah, like keeping. I don't know if there's the specification.
Okay.
Receiving.
You're forbidden to receive money and forbidden to delight in money. You have to give up the money, right? Is that right? Yeah, get rid of it. That's the meaning of nissakya pachitya, right? And then you have to confess the offense, to give it up.
Get rid of it.
After you get rid of it, right. You have to both get rid of it, all the money, and then confess the offense. The meaning of pachitya is that it's something, the doing of which makes kusala fall away. In becoming a monk, you give up certain things, attachments, but if you receive money, you're within the power of that attachment. Now, I've lost the thread a bit, but that's why you have to give it up completely. It makes one attached. It increases attachment and reduces kusala. Well, it's not appropriate for a person who's ordained. and it's something to do with all kinds of wrong. It leads one to all other kinds of wrong. Is that right?
It comes from attachment to money, possession, because without money or possession, you couldn't have the sensuous object. In other words, when you are delighted to have money as monk, it means that you are attached to sensuous object.
Bab Thang Mot.
Bab Thang Mot comes from attachment to sensuous object. It's the cause, fundamental cause.
I think the original question was what kind of offence, what degree of offence it is when receiving money, what prajiti.
When you talk about lose kusala, causes the loss of kusala, is that in the sense of the akusala, it's an opportunity condition for akusala to rise more and more in terms of the attachment to the money and the wanting of sense pleasures, and therefore losing the opportunity to while your mind is engaged in that, it's a loss of opportunity for kusala. Is that what it means?
Life shouldn't have anything to do with money at all, because when we have money, we can have all sensuous objects. So what money is for? For sensuous object. That's why monks declare that they have becoming monk in order to have no attachment to sensuous object. So they couldn't or should.
I understood that, but it was earlier on when we were talking, it was the expression was used to lose kusala, a cause for losing kusala. And my first reaction was kusala gama performed in the past is not going to be lost. It will at some point become kusala vipaka. So I thought it probably means once these attachments are the seeds are planted for more attachment to sensuous objects because of the money,
less kusala.
Yeah. Yes, that's what I thought. Yeah. Is that? I'm looking for some confirmation that that's what it means. The expression losing kusala sound seemed odd.
It makes kusala fall away was what.
Yeah, I'm not losing it. Kusala tokpai. Yeah, the kusala falls away. So any kusala that he may have had before obtaining the money, because presumably the money is for obtaining sensuous objects, then less opportunity for kusala.
Yeah, you cannot lose the kusala.
No.
There can be less opportunities for kusala to accumulate and fewer opportunities for kusala karma to bring result. And it's not just like for lay persons, of course there's lots of attachment to sensuous objects and we don't give up using money or this kind of thing, but here it's much more serious because it is the monk and the monk's rules and the monk's way of life. And so the implications for falling away of kusala or kusala not bringing its result or for akusala karma are much stronger.
So, has your question been answered?
Yes. And today there are many monks who have kapya, the ones who they don't keep the money themselves, but any money that is offered to them will be kept by another person, like a lay person, and whenever he needs something, he can ask that person to use that money to buy you something for him. So is that considered proper still?
Khun Singop is explaining that there is a proper way for funds to be given to a third person if they are for a specific purpose. But the crucial thing is that Bhikkhu is not taking delight in having that money available or what it can get for him. He may need robes from time to time or medicines or so forth, and money can be left with the third person for that purpose quite legitimately. It all comes down to this issue of taking delight in the money and what it can get. So if that is breached, then it's contrary to the Vinaya.
And I also think that it doesn't mean that he can ask the person who helped him to buy a cellular phone.
Right.
It has to be something that, you know, appropriate for the monks.
No.
Something that's allowable.
Yeah.
I think that even if he has the idea that it's my money that is apathy, because that is not for him. What is for him is for clothes and whatever requisites.
For him to use.
Yeah, only
that. It's given for a specific purpose.
The meaning of apathy, the offense.
So there's the idea that, okay, I'm not handling money, but the capier is holding the money, and then, okay, I can ask for any books I like or cell phone or computer to have in my kuti. Then it is apathy, it is an offence, because it's the idea that it's like my money or special funds. It's not just the requisites that are necessary for living the monk's life.
What about cell phones? One sees monks with a lot of cell phones.
Okay,
what's...
ask one single.
Okay.
Not one of the four requisites.
A cell phone is not one of the four requisites. So if a monk is given a cell phone, he needs to give it up?
He shouldn't receive it in the first place.
And if one knows a monk has a cell phone and one is communicating, then if one is calling him on the cell phone, then inappropriate too.
So in answer to Anne's question, a monk is supposed to know what he can and cannot receive right on the spot.
Is there any problem with monks that you'd like to understand for the lay people to know the right or the proper way to do or to help monks?
Certainly there are a lot of things, but I hope that it will come in my mind. So anyone, if you have any questions, for example, if I want to help a monk to travel from one place to another place, I can give that money for another person who can buy the tickets for him. So that would be one of the four requisites, right? Travel, no.
Yes.
Places.
Holy places? No.
Maybe. Yes. So we have to know whether it's right place or not.
Mm-hmm. So paying the ticket for him to go to a discussion, Dharma discussions, for example? No, to another person who buy the tickets for him, if I cannot buy myself or something.
To study Dharma is all right, at the right place too?
Yes.
About helping him to come to have discussion here.
So what he's saying on this question of travel is that I think he's inferring it's not one of the four requisites. So if the monk needs to travel, then he needs someone to go with him.
Like Jonathan was explaining before when he came on one trip to Sri Lanka, that friends in Thailand wanted to help arrange for a monk, Dhammadaro, to come back to Thailand. So Jonathan went to Sri Lanka to meet him and then took him to the holy places and brought him back, but not just send an airplane ticket to someone to come back, because that wouldn't be appropriate.
And Khun Singok gave the example of the monk needing to go to the doctor. So quite a legitimate purpose. It needs travel, but there needs to be someone to accompany him there if he can't get there on his under his own steam. And now he's distinguishing between a ticket and a voucher that is usable, because earlier he said money or things that can be used in place of money is the same thing. buying a ticket, for example, it just entitles you to get a seat on the conveyance. So there's nothing wrong with the monk holding a ticket, being given a ticket, which he uses to travel.
Question is about here. No answer yet.
It's Jonathan to give him is whether it would be, now we're having useful Dharma discussion, would it be appropriate to bring a monk here to a place like this or a resort in Thailand? This is the question.
He said, first of all, you have to stay at a temple. And secondly, the place for discussion has to be appropriate. And then you have to look at several things to determine whether it's appropriate or not.
Right here. Were monk, I wouldn't come, because surrounding like this is not for peace at all.
Go my mo.
For me.
Kani mo my mo ni ko khun ka wa put yak.
Difficult to say.
Mo ka piksu mai.
Even the lay people's manners of speech and action and sitting up, I think that it's not the proper way for monk to just come in and around with people sitting, talking, laughing.
What about times you hear of people inviting monks to their homes to give a dana, or sometimes just to give a dana and then talk to people? Is that very different from this? Prapaiban.
They usually set it up in a certain way.
And then at those times, the monk is just brought, someone brings them in, and they receive the dana and give the talk and then leave immediately. They don't sit around while the lay people are eating and laughing and having fun and going for walks. So they just go for a particular purpose, or if it's service or something like this. If I'm a monk, even to go on a tour with lay people, I wouldn't do it.
I guess I'm wondering about, for here, for example, we have a discussion between 4 and 6. If someone were to bring a monk to arrive at 4 and then leave right after the discussion, you still don't think that would be suitable?
ในสมัยพุทธกาลนี่พุทธองค์ทรงเสด็จไปที่ที่เขานิมนต
์ In the time of the Buddha, monks accepted invitations to go to lay people's house for dana and to give a dhamma talk, but they didn't take part in the lay people's activities. They didn't associate with the lay people. They were invited for that purpose of the dana and giving the talk, and they did that, and then they went, and that was it.
To understand Dhamma is very important, but we have to think about the proper way to. For example, in the Buddha's time, a monk can go to visit a person like Cittakarapati with the intention, the purpose to have Dhamma talk with him who saw his anagami, see, like that. It's all right. And to follow the Buddha to any place where people ask him to go for dana and dhamma, proper place, proper time. So it's different from today's. If he would have monk here, it's not like that.
I think if a monk was here, we wouldn't be having this seating arrangement. It'd have to be made more appropriate. But I think Ajahn's point is that we are here for informal discussion, and it wouldn't be informal discussion anymore if there was a monk here.
และที่ตรงนี้เนี่ยมันไม่ใช่ที่อยู่ของพวกเราในส่วนเราเนี่ยไม่ได้ตัดครับถ้าเป็นบ้านของเราก็คือนิมนต์ท่านมา
So I think Khun Singok feels that if we wanted to invite a monk here for dana or for dhamma talk, it would have to be done appropriately, and then that would be done, and then he would leave, and no association with the lay people.
A
think there are two main points too. One is the monk has completely left the lay life, so for the monk there shouldn't be the association or the reminder of the lay life or of what he has left, because we're helping him to live the monk's life as purely as possible. So this is why there shouldn't be any association. So it's the convenience of the monk and what is appropriate for the monk, and also for the lay people. So if the lay people are coming for the purpose of informal discussion, actually, as Jonathan said, no more informal discussion, actually. And the bhikkhu really should give a talk. So it's a totally different kind of arrangement. So it's different if it's in the session hall, like in Colombo, then it's a more formal arrangement and one respects certain ways and one is not reminding the monk of the lay life. One is just there for the purpose of discussing Dharma, but here it's different.
When we have discussion in Colombo or wherever we have, it's all right when it's such a place that we have prepared. But for Na Trang or Nga Chang or resort or any other place, I think that it's not appropriate.
Nga Trang, you mean in the
even
conference
in the
room?
Resort, seaside,
oh, yeah.
Like White Sands,
exactly.
Resort or Gangrejan or here,
yeah.
Not appropriate at all, because impossible to have the right kind of preparations in such a place.
Like in the hotel in Nha Trang, it's okay, right? Because it's just the discussions and formal. But it seems that today is impossible to leave the monkhood, because it's impossible to leave the monkhood properly.
That's what I think.
Impossible. The monk's hood, and very difficult as a monk to hear the Dhamma, to discuss the Dhamma.
Even in the previous times, like at time of Buddha, it was difficult to live the monk's life properly. Because you have to give up everything associated with the lay life. And have to follow the Vinaya perfectly to give up the attachment, use of money and things like that that lay people have. The life of a monk is pure, but very difficult to do properly. And the Vinaya is very detailed. Even a little deviation isn't acceptable for a monk, whereas it would be for a lay person. If one is to follow the Vinaya strictly in all its respects, one's acts of speech and body have to be those of the Arahant. And the Buddha gave in detail the conduct by body and speech to be followed by the monks. That conduct of speech and body is the beginning of the practice for release, eradication. And if you want to gain release from defilements, there has to be practice in strict accordance with the Vinaya.
To me, I think that it's wrong from the very beginning, because anyone who does not understand the teaching at all just want to become monk. So what's the purpose of becoming a monk? Because monk in the old days, after listening to the teachings, can understand one's own accumulation and latent tendency. It's right for him to study and follow the teachings in monkhood, not in lay people anymore. That's why those who understand this would become monk. But for anyone who does not have any idea, any understanding of what the teachings is, just want to be monk, is wrong from the very beginning. That's why they cannot understand the benefit of following the rules at all. because they don't know what the rules are, and they don't know Dhamma, so they don't know where to go.
And they don't see the relevance of the rules and following the rules.
And this leads to the downfall of the teachings too.
พระวินัยเนี่ยแปลว่านำอกุศลออกคราวนี
้ Without understanding is impossible. They don't know what is yab and what is not yab.
What is yab?
A course.
Yeah.
And fine.
They have no idea.
Yeah.
The literal meaning of Vinaya is to lead a kusala out.
ครับพระบัญญัติไว้ไม่ประพฤติปฏิบัติล่วงละเมิดก็ถือว่าไม่ทำบาปทางกาย
What for? Just to do that. Even when it's lay people, one can do that. No need to become monk.
Well, he's talking about bodily actions and following correct conduct of body.And Ajahn is questioning whether it's necessary to be a monk in order to do that, because even lay people can behave properly.
But if some people, they have the accumulation to be away from the lay life, but today it's impractical to keep on the precepts, so they can be ordained as samanera, that is, can be an option for them?
Samanen ko tong raksa sin 10.
He said there are 10 precepts for the samanera. Ajahn said more than that, and then he mentioned a further 75 rules the samaneras have to follow. What was your question about? Is that an option? You said, is that an option?
Yes, because some people, they have the tendency to not live the life. They just want to be away from...
be easier way to live. They just like easy way, so they think that lay life, common lay life, is not as easy. So they just want, not understanding the goal or the purpose of being a monk or samanera. But I think today nobody can be like monks in the old days. Better to be samanera.Because samanera can cook, but monk cannot, right?
So I can see the point of associating with the lay people. It's not conducive for leading the monk's life in purity. But I just want to know more that in the Vinaya, because I know of certain rules, for example, they cannot talk with the woman without having...a third person who can understand what they are talking about. But is there any rule that is more specific about associating with people in a general way?
Actually, there are also many rules about like the height of the chair and many, many details and about the monk speaking first or...many points and details, I think.
Concerning the associating with the lay people, that makes it difficult for the monk to just being in a place like this, for example. Yes, because I know about certain rules like not talking with the women if they are just two of them, you know, things like that, but I don't know about others.
คำถามคือคำถามคือว่าถ้ามีพระกำลังนั่งอยู่ที่นี่รวมสนทนากันกับเราเขาจะผิดไปไหนอะไรบ้าง
ถ้าภิกษุนั่งอยู่ตรงนี้กับพวกเรา
so of courseNaturally, he says if there's a male person present, then that's not an offence. If it was all women, it would be.
ถ้าในห้องนี้มีผู้หญิงทั้งหมดพูดเกิน6คำก็เป็นปาจิตตี
As I understand what Kunstop is saying, if it was all women, there'd be two offences. One is being in a room alone with women, and speaking more than 6 words would be another offence. Six words.
Six.
The monk, yes. Right. If speaking more than six words, it would be an offense. A group of women only.
With the man
present?
If there's another monk, like two
monks
with a group of women,
ไม่เป็นอาบัติปาจิตตี
not an offense.
ถ้าเกี่ยวผู้หญิงจีบผู้หญิง
hits on a woman, makes an advance towards a woman. Okay.
อันนั้นเป็นอาบัติหนัก
Okay, that's a heavy offense.
ครับคราวนี้ถ้าอยู่ในที่รับตากับผู้หญิง2ต่อ2
in private if he's in a room alone with a woman it's two offenses
ครับคือสันนิษฐานท่านเรียกว่าอนิยตว่า
Sangha Desesa and Pajitya
คราวนี้ถ้าอยู่ในที่รับหูก็หมายความว่า
I think he's saying if a monk is alone with a woman, but not inside a room, but out of earshot of someone else, and speaks more than six words, then that's an offense.
คราวนี้ถ้าอยู่ในห้อง2ต่อ2ก็ท่านก็สันนิษฐานไว้เหมือนกันว่าก็อาจจะเป็น3ก็ได
้ If he's alone with a woman in a room, it can be three offenses. One is pajiti. The other is speaking more than six words.And also making an advance to a woman, and the third one is the strongest, which is to have a sexual misconduct with a woman.
Well, I think we're getting quite a long way away from the question, which was if there was a monk here in the room with us now.
คราวนี้อีกข้อหนึ่งก็คือว่าถ้ามีความกำหนัดอยู่จับต้องกายผู้หญิงเป็นสังขารพิเศษ
One more offense.If he touches a woman with pleasure, then it's another offense. Sankhatiset, yeah. Sankhatiset.
ร่วมสนทนาที่นี่ไม่ผิดอะไรไม่เป็นอาบัติ
ก็ไม่ผิดอะไรแต่เพียงแต่ไม่เหมาะสมกับสมณะ
Not appropriate. Not against any specific rule, but not appropriate.
Also, if the monk were here.
The discussion with us have more detail. Cannot sit the same seat with woman. Yeah.
I think the point about is
it's not a matter of just the individual rules, but the reason for being a monk and leading the monk's life and just the association with the lay way of living is not appropriate. And cause a lot of.Inconvenience, like if the monk were here, first of all, where is the nearby temple? And then the monk's meal must finish before 12. So are you asking the staff to make special arrangement? Or so it's the many factors, but it's more to do with the association with the lay life, the mixing of the monk's life with the lay life that's not.
Can a monk live in a layman's house?
ไม่ได้ครับเพราะว่าภิกษุจะต้องไม่ได้อยู่บ้านต้องอยู่วัดอยู่แล้ว
Can't live in a house.
ขอโทษนะฮะอีกนิดเดียวบ้านร้างได้ไหม
ได้อยู่แล้วครับท่านจะเรือนร้างก็คือท่านไปพักอะไรเนี่ยก็ได้อยู่แล้วครับผม
Yes.
Questionable whether a monk can stay or live in a hotel because it's under the same roof. So even it's a very big hotel.
But if it's different entrances, I think
it's the same roof. Yeah.
Yes, but I think
it would have to be an outhouse, and so it's really.
So if a house of like people, but.They just move out for the monks who live there by himself. Can he stay there?
ถ้าไม่มีคฤหัสถ์เลยพระก็พักได้แต่ว่าเขาไม่เหมาะกับพระอยู่ดี
Not against a particular rule, but not appropriate. I think he's talking about living, but you're talking about a temporary stay, which could be a different matter.
Once I attended a meeting at the Muniti about the same roof, not under the same roof, and Paina was also there, she's architecture, and the Thai houses are with different roofs like that, so that the bhikkhu can stay and not under the same roof. That was a question that was raised.
I remember when a couple of the monks went with us on the trip to India, and they had studied and they wouldn't stay in the hotel. I think they just sat in the coach all night. And I remember he explained in detail about how it couldn't be under the same roof. So if you say, oh, well, in a Thai house or a different roof, it's sort of like trying to find a way around it, but actually the idea is that it should be completely separate from lay people. And then if it's a stay, well, how long? Because then there are all the rules about how the monk has to have the regular confession and who's the confession to and all these kinds of.
I also heard about when the monks need to do the patimokkha, they need to do that in sima, like a proper place. So it if a temple or monastery where there's no, that's something I'm not sure about, but that some monasteries, if the rules are not respected, then even that monastery is not considered to be proper to do the patimokkha.
Jing แล้วก็คือว่าพระจะประชุมสวดปฏิโมกเนี่ย
The chanting of the Patimokkha doesn't have to be within a sima. It can be in another place, like under a tree. It's got to be a particular area, though, but the area can be established. It doesn't have to be within a sima.
The ภูเขาเล็กๆก็ได
้ Small hill.
Because I think that we understand sima, that it's just only that, but actually it's not. It's in some of Jesse.
Sima is the boundary of a temple, the boundary stones of a temple.
The Patimokkha, I think it has to be with other properly ordained bhikkhus, not with bhikkhus from other traditions, for example, or anyone who happens to be at the temple has to be with other people, other monks who've been properly ordained.
ขอเพิ่มนิดนึงก็คือว่าสีมานี่เป็นเขตแดนจะเป็นของธรรมชาติ
The sima, the markers of the boundary, don't have to be stones, as I indicated. They can be other things, natural things like a tree, river, bank, mountain, as long as it's defined.
อันนี้คือเป็นสีมาที่เป็นธรรมชาติ
Natural sima.
คราวนี้เป็นสีมาที่สมมุติขึ้นตามพระวินัยที่
Assigned by the monk.
Assigned by the monk.
เรียกว่าเป็นสีมาที่สมมุติตามพระวินัย
It's a sima that is
two kinds. One is natural.
Yes. Yes. According to the Vinaya.
อันนี้นี่ก็คือจะต้องทำตามที่กำหนดก็คือ
For this one, the sima.Marker is made of stone marking, and there are specific rules of where to put it and in what direction.
อันนี้เป็นแบบถาวร
Yes, it is like permanent sema.
แล้วก็จะใช้ก้อนหินเป็น
All directions from the specifically this is the north direction, south, west, east, specifically, and distance and all that.
เดี๋ยวนะคะเมแอสินไทยลูกนิมิตนี่มันคืออะไร
ลูกนิมิตคือ
I'm asking about Thai culture
ครับอันนี้นี่ก็คืออย่างที่ท่านอาจารย์ถามนี่เป็นเขตแดนคำว่าสีมาแปลว่าเขตแดนที่จะลง
boundary
ใช่แล้วก็
but the markers are different right
ใช่
Krungmai is the, I'm sort of not sure whether it's Luk Nimit or the Krungmai are the markers for the boundary.
ส่วนนิมิตนั้นนี่เป็นก้อนหินที่เป็นเครื่องหมายให้รู้ว่าเขตแดนตรงนี้ตรงนี้ตรงนี
้เหลือตรงนี้ใต้ตรงนี้ก็ต้องลงตรงนี้ Items like stones, trees, etc.
ครับ
ครับครับครับครับครับครับครับครับครับครับครับครับครับครับครับครับ
ครับครับครับครับครับครับครับครับครับครับครับครับครับครับครับ
อันนี้ลูกนิมิตนี่ในยุคหลังนี่ก็จะทำ
Is there a translation for ลูกนิมิตลูกนิมิต any
normally associated with
Sema
when you speak of
and Sema people tend to think that it's the same thing but Sema is the it means boundary and ลูกนิมิต is markers
so what's the Krungmai
the Krungmai
sign
Another question. You mentioned about the monks having to meet other monks for Patimokkha within certain time. What about the bhikkhus in the Buddha time who went to seclusion for some months, for example?
เรื่องของสวดปฏิโมกข์เนี่ยก็คือพระองค์ทรงอนุญาตให้ภิกษุ
So there needs to be there needs to be four at least. To form a quorum.
ครับ ครับคราวนี้ถ้าอยู่สามลูกไม่ต้องสวดปฏิโมก
ข์ If there's less than four, then they don't recite the Patimokkha, but they what บริสุทธิ
์ บอกบริสุทธิ์หมายความว่าผมเป็นผู้บริสุทธิ
์ They just make a verbal declaration of their compliance with the Vinaya.
คราวนี้ถ้าอยู่รูปเดียวอยู่รูปเดียวก็คือวันนี้เป็นวันโบสถ
But for a monk living right on his own, then he resolves on the Uposatha day, he must resolve to observe the Vinaya.
ครับตรวจสอบว่าเราได้ทำล่วงละเมิดในพระวินัยไหม
He makes a resolution to live in accordance with the Vinaya.
To himself?
Yes, to himself. So he observes the Uposatha day in that way.
Because the purpose of the Uposatha day and the Patimokkha is to make confession if they have done any offences, right?
A person living on his own doesn't have anyone to make confession to.
ถ้าหนึ่งคนถือว่าเป็นบุคละหรือบุคคล
One is on their own, and two or three are a sort of a group, and then four is a sangha for the purpose of Patimokkha.
Four
up, four or more.
If today a monk, a Theravada bhikkhu, lives in a community with Mahayana monks, for example, or monks from other traditions, what are the consequences?
ถ้าพระต่างนิกายนี่จะไม่ลงโบสถ์ร่วมกัน
They can't observe the Patimokkha with those other monks
ถือว่าเป็นนานาสังวาสก็คือคนละคณะสงฆ์
See, members of different order
So can they consider that for example they are on their own even though they're in that community and make a resolveTo observe the Vinaya, even though they're living that way.
He said, in summary, the most important thing is to follow what the Buddha, rules. Yes.
About the rules, not eating after midday, doesn't mean that we have to finish the meal before noon or starting before noon.
พระวินัยห้ามฉันห้ามฉันอาหารตั้งแต่เที่ยงเป็นต้นไป
No eating after 12
whatsoever.
Finish.
You have to finish.
No, nothing. No, it says it forbids eating after 12.
We will need to know all about more than 200 precepts for the monk.
เป็น227สิกขาบท
227
ให้พูดรายละเอียดไหม
I think that it's benefit for lay people to understand monks rule in order to know how to behave properly. And if you read the Vinaya, you can see that so many, many good things like proper manners for eating, visiting, and so on, that anyone can follow. And we don't need to count, we have more than 5.
ขอพูดรวมๆว่า227สิกขาบท
of the 227 4 are parajika
4 yeah parajika
for parajik I think that lay people should know otherwise you don't know who's monk and who's not monk
สิกขา1ก็คือเสพเมถุนก็คือร่วมเพศ
sexual misconduct
ฆ่ามนุษย์ให้ตาย
kill a human being
ข้อที่3ก็คือขโมยของคนอื่นตั้งแต่1อาหามาสกขึ้นไป
stealing what from of more than a certain amount
แล้วข้อต่อไปก็คืออวดคุณวิเศษที่ไม่มีในตน
I have jhana ยานด้วยใช่ป่ะครับ
ยานด้วย
and jhana too
ยานวิปัสสนาสมาบัติหรือการบรรลุ
Superhuman state, right?
ครับแต่เจตนานะ
with intention
ครับอันนี้สี่ข้อแล้ว
Claim falsely
ครับอันนี้ขาดจากภิกษุ
Such a person is not a bhikkhu regardless of whether he's wearing robes or acknowledge the offense or whatever.
But it's knowingly claiming certain attainments, not falsely.
ถ้าไม่เจตนาไม่มีเจตนาก็ไม่เป็นอบัติ
He misunderstood that he attained like that, but not with intention.
Yeah, that's not an offense.
แล้วก็เสียสติ
is insane.
คุ้มครั่งด้วยเวทนาอะไรนี่ไม่ได้เจตนา
Mad or crazy.
เป็นต้นบัญญัติหมายความว่าเป็นคนแรกที่ทำผิด
He's the first one who broke this rule, which means he's the first one when after the Buddha, you know, when it happened and the Buddha set this rule. He's the first one, and after that, the Buddha set up this rule.
อันนี้นี่ขาดจากความเป็นภิกษุฉะนั้นก็จะมีอาบัติขนาดกลาง
Okay, well, if you're interested in the numbers of all the times,
เอาชื่อไปก่อนแล้วกัน
I think all of us don't know all the details about what is Sanghadesisa, Disesa, and then Pachitya. Could you please explain briefly about that?
ก็แปลว่าล่วงละเมิดแล้วยังมีความเป็นภิกษุเหลืออยู่ไม่ได้ขาด
For Sanghadisesa, he's still a monk. Something like that, yes.
He has to confess in front of the assembly of the bhikkhu. And what does that mean exactly, the assembly of the bhikkhu?
Sanghadisesa ni จะแสดงทันทีไม่ได้ต้องถูกลงโทษก่อน
First, he will be punished 6 days. Yes. Yeah, with kind of reducing his status. Yeah, 6 days. If he confessed, but if he hid it, it would 6 days plus he won. And equal the number that of days that he has been hiding.
นั้นจากนั้นต้องไปขอให้สงฆ์ได้รับทราบแล้วก็รับเข้าหมู่เป็นภิกษุปกติ
Then he after that period he has to go back and ask the sangha to accept him again as the bhikkhu at least 20 bhikkhu
Living alone in the forest or living with Mahayana monks, it's all impossible really, unless he follows really very perfect Vinaya.
I think that if anyone would like to live like monk but not being a monk, it can do.
As a lay person, one can follow as many rules as one like, yes, the way one eats, the way one speaks, one's manners, behavior. One can read and study and consider the reasons for the rules and follow as many as one likes or are appropriate. Long before we were married, but when Jonathan was living in Bangkok, Ajahn used, he was supporting all the monks and taking care of them all, but Ajahn once said to me he was the best monk because just living very simply and following good manners and behavior, not asking for anything, not demanding anything. So if one has accumulations to live simple way of life and be interested in the Dhamma, not necessary to be a bhikkhu at all.
Lord, you said once that to be good lay people is very difficult enough. So why become monk? This can help one to live as good lay people because one realizes that it's difficult, but still one can do.
Thing like the monk cannot ask for anything, and it's a very good reminder for a layperson not to ask for anything at all, and how one speaks, all these different rules helpful to consider.
So if a monk keeps very good the major offenses, like, and just make offenses on minor points, and if he so he's still a monk.
But if one considers that it's just really minor, isn't it nasty to think that for monk's life that is just really little or minor?
Of course, in the absolute sense, no. But I think that in today's situation, it's true that we are already, as lay people, we are already very happy to meet the monks who keep the most important precepts because it's so rare already. But of course, I agree with you that a real monk should not consider any rule as minor, not important.
Because with that attitude, they could keep breaking the same rules, like use of money, for example, and then just consider, okay, as long as I confess, it's okay. But obviously, there's no sincerity in the confession if they keep doing it.
But the very small ones, like, I don't know, the way they have to dress and the robes, the way they have to arrange their robes and things like that. Money, for me, it's very important precept. Rule for monks.
Well, I'm not sure that the way of wearing the robes is a minor matter. Like wearing other bits of clothing that are not robes?
I don't know in details because I'm not a monk, but I heard they tell us about some runes, a certain way to dress.
It's all laid down. Exactly how it should be worn and when it has to be covered over the shoulder, whether one shoulder can be uncovered, that sort of thing.
Better study the rule before becoming a monk.
When one reads the Vinaya, one reads the background and the reason, so the good reason why for each rule, so it's not inconsequential for no reason. For so many rules, it's not just about the monk's way of thinking, but how it may appear to others or to society. So, for example, if a monk is speaking more than six words to a woman, how does it appear to other people? So many, many rules are according to how it may be perceived by society or the villagers around, but each one for good reasons. So it's good to study and so that one knows what is the reason for it.
case the monk asked for help, like help him to buy an air ticket to an inappropriate place, or like buy something that is apart from the four requisites. So how is that case? Because in course we can help any people as from Kusala, but at the other time it's not good for that monk, because buy something that is not the four requisite, or like or etiquette to somewhere.
Asking about the act of asking, or whether the lay person should do it, or what?
Yeah, the lay person should do it.
Oh, well, the monk's rules don't apply to lay persons, of course. But should, there's a question should, about the asking. Yeah.
I understood the question to be when a lay person is asked, shouldn't be asking, let's start with that. But when a lay person is asked to do something which would be inappropriate for the monk, how should a lay person respond?
พระนี่จะขอของจากคฤหัสถ์ไม่ได้แม้ปัจจัย4ที่เหมาะสม
shouldn't be asking for things from lay people, and I didn't quite catch the second part.
Oh, cannot.
Cannot.
ไม่สามารถถ้าขอจะเป็นอาบัติแม้ปัจจัย4ก็ขอจากญาติ
accepting asking relatives
คราวนี้คำว่าญาติหมายถึงญาติจริง
ๆ true relative
หมายถึงปู่ย่าตายายจริงๆแล้วก็พ่อแม่แล้วก็พี่ชายน้องชายพี่สาวน้องสาว
close family members
ครับแต่ถ้าอินลอไม่ได้เลย
right
ไม่ได้หลานหลานได้ไหมปู่ย่าตายายหลานหลานก็ได้อะนะ
anyway the very close family
หลานน่ะได้เป็นสามี
เ
ห็นแต่ว่าเป็นพี่เขยพี่สะใภ้อะไรไม่ได้อินลอไม่ได้เลย
accepting he's able to ask close family members very close family members direct parents and siblings but not in laws
ญาติต้องภาวนาด้วยหรือเปล่าคะหรือไม่ต้องก็ได
้ญาติไม่ต้องภาวนาแต่ถ้าภาวนานี่ก็คือ
This term of bawarana, which means a person has offered to support the monk in respect of certain things. So obviously, that person can be asked.
คือ bawarana ไว้เท่าไหร่ก็เท่านั้น
Depending on the terms of the offer. Right. For to support you in medicines for a year, something like that.
I can just use this. What was the point about can ask family members even though they haven't offered?
Yes.
Even though they haven't offered. Okay. But then...
Parents have to have given support, consent for
in the first place.
In the first place.
But even then it has to be an offer that is appropriate, not just... Yeah. One wouldn't give an offer for a ticket to go on a sightseeing trip. And so... That would never be an appropriate offer. And I think that if a monk asks one as a lay person for something inappropriate or asks for anything at all when an offer hasn't been made, sometimes the best answer is just silence, because it's not the duty of lay people to tell monks what the rules are.
So when if a monk asks you for something and you give, right or wrong, suitable or not?
Maybe from Sarah's, I think it's not proper.
You give? That's why lay people should know the rules of monks enough to behave properly.
In that circumstance, I would never give, and I would just be quiet and turn away. I remember one time a monk came to visit our discussion at the foundation, and he started talking to Ajahn about all kinds of things that was inappropriate for a monk to talk about. He started talking about his problems living in a monastery in Chiang Mai and all sorts of things that just not appropriate for a monk to talk to a lay person about, and about food issues and all sorts of things, and was talking for a long time. And then at the end he asked Ajahn, oh, what's your opinion? And she just didn't say a word, just complete silence sometimes, because it's not our job to tell him what's appropriate and not. But one cannot join in that lay-like conversation with a monk, because it's just totally inappropriate what we say about it's trying mixing lay life and monk's life cannot be. So from our point of view, better just distance ourselves and be silent in that circumstance. So for me, if I'm asked for anything, I wouldn't do it, because even that can be a support or help to the monk to learn to consider, oh, why that person is just staying quiet.
When single, what will you do if you are asked by a monk or monks to give him such and such, or even building a temple?
So even like in normal conversation or communication with the monk, I think there's nothing we cannot talk only about Dharma. Even like when we ask how about his health situations or his health status or how is his living, is impossible, right? When we talk with the monk.
I think it depends.
There is a man present, like one well-known bhikkhu came to visit Hong Kong, nothing to do with our arrangement, and Jonathan and I visited, and we know this monk has health issues, so we asked about health concerns, and actually we made arrangements to take him to visit our doctor a few times and this kind of thing. So it depends. But I wouldn't start talking about the flowers in the garden with the monk, or about the problems he has with living with other monks in his temple or something like that.
It would seem that the questions about health or something, if you're just making chit-chat, you know, just having a conversation because you can't think of something else to say, probably not appropriate. But in the case where you know there are health concerns, then...
If a sick monk comes to your house, you would like to help him, that's all right. But if he asks for medicine or treatment, what will you do?
If a monk comes to your house and asks for... If a sick monk comes to your house and asks for medicine, he's not allowed to ask. But if you see him and you know that he's sick, you can help.
You have offered and have said you would like to help, and like in this our case, we knew about the problem and we offered the help, so the monk was not asking for anything. It's fine. But if you haven't offered to help and the monk asks for medicines, cannot. I know, Ajahn.
But I think that if you allow monk to ask, then it's all right.
Yes.
Whatever you want, whatever you need.
If you have offered and said, please tell me what you need, then it's all right for him to ask. If you have.
If he makes known his illness but doesn't actually ask for...
But if he makes known his illness as a way of asking, then it would not be appropriate. Yeah. If the purpose of making known his illness is in order for you to say, to offer, then so it's the intention.
He said that if he's just telling, saying,
I've got a fever.
I've got the fever.
I've got the flu.
Yeah. Got the flu.
Doesn't ask for anything.
That's okay.
Basically, when you see someone sick coming to the monk or anyone who comes to your house, you just ask, what can I do for you? I'm happy to help you out, right?
Yeah, so then if you don't say that, then obviously there's not the willingness to do it.
The bhikkhus a lot, if one understands about the rules and the reasons for them, because then one can support in the appropriate way and not help them to breach the precepts. But if one doesn't know and one just gives whatever is asked for or something like this, it may be kusala, but it's very unsuitable kusala because it's not actually helping the monk at all.